whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
I just worked on the delivery this week.
Oh no! Why are you yelling?
Unit!
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and we do our best to keep you highly entertained while you're hanging out with us during these extraordinary hours. I don't care if you're waking up, if you're dealing with insomnia, maybe you haven't even gone to bed, you're driving, you're working, you just like the show, and so you choose not to miss it. Maybe you're catching it on podcast, whatever it is. We're glad that you choose us. Thank you so much. And I do know that people are listening in real time because I get your messages. I know that you reach out and you have suggestions. You always let me know when I've messed up. You are, in fact, the After Hours Corrections Department. And you respond to the questions that we throw out there, as well as our polls. Now, you still have a little bit of time left to vote for Monday MVP. That one is closing very shortly. And we've had a really brisk back and forth between the top two, Russell Wilson and Saquon Barkley, for Monday MVP. Very soon, in fact, in the next half hour, you'll have the candidates for TD of the week. And by the way, if you check out, I didn't do this on Facebook yet, but it's there. It'll be there before the end of the show. If you check out my Twix, at least for now, at A-Law Radio, you'll see some photos I took when I was out hiking, well, with my husband, but also 8 million of our closest friends who decided they would go leaf peeping as well. Oh my gosh, it was insane in this particular part of the Catskills. There's a hike to a promenade, a rocky promenade that hangs out over the side of a mountain or off the side of a mountain. It's really neat. It's got a bunch of rock outcroppings and you kind of walk along it for a good quarter mile and the views are spectacular. On a really clear day, you can see, gosh, it's 100 miles, the very shadowy, and I mean very shadowy, almost as though it's a figment of your imagination, the skyline of New York, but only on a really clear day. That's how incredible these views are from the Catskills. But because it was leaf peeping season, there were 8 million people. The one particular state park we went to, it's around Lake Minnewaska, for those of you who want to look it up. I've been there multiple times before. We've been there 3 times already this year to take different friends and to go on different hikes. But the one hike that we wanted to do, we had saved for the fall. I'd never seen it this busy. I'd never even seen half the parking lot filled. Forget all of them. There are multiple levels of parking lots. And within 20 minutes, they were completely full. We're talking about hundreds of parking lots or hundreds of parking spaces in these lots. And so we couldn't get up near the visitor center. In fact, we were parking down at the base, essentially, of the foothills to get into this little section of the mountains. Oh my gosh. So we had to add, it's pretty much straight up too, along a road, but still, we had to add 1.5 miles of hiking up a road just to get to the point at which the trail started. So we got to work at it. It was about 8 miles of hiking on Saturday, and the weather was glorious, plus it's peak leaf peeping season in the Northeast. And so for that reason, there were zillions of people. In retrospect, not a great day to take our dog, Daisy, because even though she loves hiking and she does really well, when there's masses of people, she gets nervous. She'd rather deal with dogs and other people. She's afraid of people for the most part. And so, not afraid, just she's reticent around people she doesn't know. And so we, on these narrow pathways, we kept encountering other people, and she would get nervous and she would kind of circle. And actually a couple times she ran underneath other people's feet. So other hikers, it's hard to put a dog on a leash when you're doing mountain hikes, because if they get spooked or they run a different direction or they're not taking the same path you are, either they can wrap around a tree very easily or they can pull one direction. You can lose your footing. And so generally dogs are not on leashes. We're on these types of rocky mountain hikes, meaning the mountains are rocky. And so that was kind of rough because she got a little nervous and anxious with all the people. However, we did manage to get some incredible photos because it was probably 75 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. And so we were taking photos of the different colors with the trees, and they were glorious. So if you haven't seen them, in fact, I'll even retweet right now at A-Law Radio. And then I promise I will put these photos up on Facebook as well. I think they're on my personal Facebook page for those of you who are friends, or if we're friends there. But it was just incredible to be out there. Also stressful, though, because you feel like you're racing people to get up the path. And then if people are coming down or going up while you're going the opposite direction, you have to stop. And then there becomes a traffic jam. Have you ever read those stories or heard those stories, Producer Pete, about what it's like these days on Mount Everest? Or I guess during the peak climbing season for Mount Everest, there's really only a month where people can get up there safely, where it's the peak and prime opportunity to climb to the top of Mount Everest. And despite the fact that it's such a narrow window, or maybe because it's such a narrow window, but also in spite of the fact that it costs thousands of dollars and you have to acclimate to the thinner oxygen, so there's all these steps, and of course it's extremely dangerous, regardless of weather or equipment and all that jazz, you can die on the mountain really easily. I mean, very experienced hikers end up dying every year because it's, or I should say climbers, because it's that dangerous. But in spite of all of those factors, it's such a prestigious thing to climb to the top of the highest mountain in the world that it's crowded. And so there are these stories about people who, in some extreme cases, are losing their lives because they refuse to come down the mountain without getting to the top and having their couple of minutes at the top to be able to take selfies and plant their flag and all that jazz. But because of the weather patterns and because of how far you have to hike down once you get up there and how quickly you need to get down before it gets dark, there's a limited window. So from what I've read, let's just say it's 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you don't start down by 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you are left in the dark. You're completing the end of the hike in the dark. This is in May, April and May, when you do have good daylight. And people are, because there's so many people that want to get up there, there's so many different groups that are trying to take climbers to the top, there can end up being a line of dozens and dozens of people to get up to the top, which then delays when they can start back down. And also then people start to get nervous. There's essentially a traffic jam over parts of the mountain where it's really a dangerous climb. And so people are trying to hurry or they're getting stuck. There's actually like lines to get up or down. So that's an extreme case, but just, yeah, a lot of people complain about Mount Everest because it's become like that, almost like a Grand Central Station type of thing. So it wasn't.
Wow, no.
Yeah. I know. It's dangerous in and of itself, even if you're not dealing with hundreds of other people, right?
I watched a Zoom of it. Someone walking with a camera, maybe.
I've also heard, sadly, that the people that come in leave trash everywhere. That there are thousands and thousands and thousands of empty oxygen tanks because they take them up and then they discard them and don't take them back down. Now, I understand if your life is in danger, your most important thing is to get down the mountain with your group. But yeah, apparently there are different groups that are trying to clean up Mount Everest because the paths that people take to get to the summit have been trashed, just trash and debris everywhere.
Well, the ideal way to climb down or climb up a mountain is to have the least possible things on you.
But you have to carry oxygen tanks.
Right. They're probably like, all right, well, we can head down without it. We're going to discard.
They're empty. I know.
We're going to discard it.
Shouldn't you be taking your trash with you? I get what you're saying. Again, if you're talking about loss of life versus cleaning up the mountain, well, there's no choice there. But it is sad. You see photos of trash everywhere. So there's been a concerted effort by Nepalese climbers, you know, the ones that turn out to be the guides, and other groups that are climbing Mount Everest so that they can bring down piles and piles and bags and bags and bags of trash, which is just crazy. But all that to say, I felt a little bit like that when we were on a much shorter mountain or a much less treacherous mountain to climb to see Gertrude's nose and the colors. But the colors are glorious, and so I invite you to check out the photos at A-Law Radio. And while you're there, you can also send your questions that's tomorrow. That's our home show. Tomorrow, send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. You can reply to our question tonight. We're giving you the Chiefs. Who are the top four teams that round out the best five in the NFL? And the post is also up on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We had two more games on Monday night. I know Lamar Jackson was terrific, so there's a potential opportunity there. I mean, that's what the Ravens get for playing on Monday Night Football. Just kidding. Now, coming up this hour, we're going to get to this situation that played out in Texas. And I was thinking of it in light of what happened in Cleveland, where Myles Garrett was disturbed, and others too, other Browns disturbed, by the fact that fans were cheering when Deshaun Watson got hurt and had to be carted off on one of their motorized carts because he couldn't walk. So that was a big thing, and it made a lot of headlines. But on Saturday night in Austin, Texas, there was a situation where the refs made a call and then reversed it, and fans were incensed, and then Kirby Smart was incensed. So yeah, earlier I mentioned it, and I know some of you have pointed out I didn't get to all the details. I absolutely will. We've got audio from both Coach Sark and Coach Smart. But one hell of a game, and college football is upside down, right? Because Georgia's flexing its muscles on the road at the top team. Well, what was previously the top team in college football. So the SEC, there have been these predictions, Pete. I don't know if this is true because you know how I feel about predictions, that there could be eight SEC teams in the top 12. The college football playoff could feature eight SEC teams. Could you imagine how mad the rest of the nation would be?
Well, that's the whole concept of an expanded playoff is to have other conferences.
Right, was
there.
To avoid that. And there are going to be automatic bids, but isn't that why a lot of people were in favor of an expanded playoff, was to try to get away from so many SEC or Big Ten teams? It could happen with the Big Ten as well because of these expanded conferences. People will be livid if that happens. Livid.
Then you're making the case again. Someone's going to start making the case
right.
for more.
And yeah, no, I say less is more myself.
I think it's more of the selection process. I think it needs to be more of a numbers process rather than a selection process. I think that eliminates the problem that you would have with something like this.
But you know, the conference commissioners are not going to allow this to get out of their control like
that. Of course,
there needs to be this college football playoff selection committee.
Power.
It needs to feature guys and gals from their conferences and various schools so that they feel like their interests are represented. All right, we'll get to some more NFL coming up, but we're asking you, yes, how would you rank the top five teams in the NFL if we're giving you number one, which is the Chiefs? Pete, are you ready? Not ready? So ready? What do you think?
Oh, for mine?
Yeah. Are you ready?
Oh, I think I gave you mine.
In order?
I have three and then the rest.
Okay.
Next segment, I'll give it to you.
Okay, so Pete's not ready.
A tease.
But I'm not ready either. So I've written down the teams that I want to consider, and I still have to narrow it. Right now, Lions is my number two. So I'm good with Lions, okay. Number two. Then I've got some various combination of Texans, Commanders, Ravens, Vikings. I don't think the Bills might be my honorable mention. You know what? 7 weeks down the road, the Bills might very well be in there, but they're still transitioning. They've won, and it's impressive, and gosh, they may clinch the AFC East in week 10, but I don't know right now if I'd put them among the top five because I don't love the way they're starting. You start poorly against a lesser team, like they did this past week. They got into a 10-0 hole, and the initial numbers from their first half were brutal until they rattled off 34 points in a row. So yeah, I don't love the way they've started. Now, that being said, the Chiefs have started slow in a couple of games too and have managed to, because their defense is so good.
But the Chiefs have one of the best coaches of all time.
Yeah, and quarterbacks.
One of the best quarterbacks of all time.
Agreed. So I'm going some combination behind Lions, well, Chiefs and Lions, of Texans, Commanders, Ravens, Vikings, Bills, and also Steelers. Now, my thing with the Steelers is I still worry about their offense. It looked better with Russell Wilson in quarters 2, 3, and 4. On Sunday night, what we got in the first quarter looked like rust to me. Now, if he can, not rust, but rust. That was bad. Well, I mean, I said what I meant to say, but that could have been taken a different way. So that looked like rust to me. I just spit all over my notes. It looked like rust to me, and Russ was also rusty. And so I do think that if they can get that type of production from Najee Harris and Russ moving forward, then they will be in a much better spot, much more consistent offensively. At the same time, I'm still kind of finagling it, because here's what had to happen. After Russell Wilson completed one or two passes in the first quarter and had all of 19 passing yards, 15 of them coming on one particular throw, there was a turning point in this game that actually put the Steelers on the right path. But it took the defense for them to get in that path.
Steelers will rush four. Rodgers back to pass. Rodgers looking, has a man in between, open. Now it's picked off by Beanie Bishop, bobbled up in the air as Bishop will take it. He'll cut back to the left, looking for room. Crosses the 10, crosses the 15, crosses the 5, and gets down to the 1. He's dragged down by Devontae Adams at the 1-yard line.
Well, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Got a lot of respect for that guy. And just to be able to get not one but two of them off of him is crazy.
Beanie Bishop, a rookie who was out there for the Steelers. What a way to come up with your first two interceptions. And you hear the calls there on Steelers radio. That was the second one. But those were the turning points of this game between the Steelers and the Jets, to put the ball back in the hands of Russell Wilson and to find that rhythm. Certainly the Jets defense having to suck wind a little bit at the end of the game, second half, because of all the time that they were out there on the field. But Pittsburgh scores 14 points off those two turnovers, and that's huge. And so for that reason, the defensive player of the week is Beanie Bishop. Also, his name's awesome. Sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Gosh, we have so much to get to. Want to update you on the Niners injuries, because they left the field like the walking wounded against the Chiefs. And it wasn't just about losing the game. It was about the people and the personnel. And also, we want to update you on more of these QB injuries, too. So they still have Brock Purdy. That's not the Niners issue, but we've got some other QB injuries to pass along. The big one being Jaden Daniels and what is happening with him moving forward. At A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page as well. We are so thrilled that you're with us. I know many of you are asking me nonstop about what's going on with the neighbor and his obnoxious light. Before the top of the hour, I'll give you the latest. There's been a breakthrough.
That's a tease right there.
There's been a breakthrough, Producer Pete. After the Chiefs, who are the next best teams in the NFL. See, there's so much to do. At Amy After Hours on our Facebook page, too. Good morning if you're waking up on your Tuesday on the Infinity Sports Network.
Goal to go for Purdy. He's got three eligible to the right, including Kittle as an inside member of the trips. Purdy wants to throw out of the shotgun. Hit as he throws. The pass intercepted. Intercepted a yard deep in the end zone. It'll be a touchback. It's intercepted. The rookie, Jaden Hicks, picks it off. Twists his body. The third time in this game that Brock Purdy has been picked. And twice by rookies.
First and 10 at the Niner 18-yard line. Here comes the end around on a jet sweep. It goes to Hardman. Cuts it back and goes into the end zone. Right to left on the jet sweep. Mecole Hardman. In 22, he had three touchdowns, and now another touchdown here in 2024 on a right-to-left jet sweep.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Mitch Holt is on Chiefs Radio. We're giving you the Chiefs, who are the top five teams after the Chiefs. Some of you are getting creative on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. One particular listener who's weighing in appears to be a Bills fan. I can neither confirm nor deny, but his idea, Darren on Facebook, is 1 Buffalo, 2 Buffalo, 3 Buffalo, 4 Buffalo, 5 Buffalo. To which I will reply with a laughing so hard I'm crying emoji, because Buffalo's not better than Kansas City. Now, Buffalo's good, but Kansas City is better at this point in the season after week 7. So, here, I'm going to give you my special emoji. I do love that one. Let's see. William on Facebook, he says Ravens are number one, Lions are two, Chiefs are three, Vikings are four, Commanders are five. Angus on Facebook, Chiefs, Ravens, Lions, Steelers, Bucks. I do like the idea of Chiefs, Ravens, Lions. Whatever order you put them in, those three teams right now appear to be the best in the NFL. Kenny, Chiefs, Lions, Ravens, Commanders, Packers, with honorable mention being the Steelers. He calls them the Steelers. Uh-huh. I got you. I'm with you. Let's see. Michael, Chiefs, Lions, Vikings, Ravens, Buccaneers. Huh. All right. Maybe not after they lose their two top wide receivers on Monday night and also lose a 10-point lead. Scott on Facebook, after the Chiefs, he goes Ravens, Lions, Packers, Vikings, Commanders. There's another one where we have three NFC North teams, which I think is, that's worth mentioning. Greg on Facebook, Chiefs, Lions, Ravens, Vikings, Bills. All right, I probably should not only go Facebook responses and should share some of yours from Twix. Who else do we have here? Frank, the Chiefs, the Lions, the Niners, the Steelers, the Eagles. All right, so there's some different responses there. I like it. Lee says Chiefs, Lions, Ravens, Vikings. He can only come up with four. He does not have anybody else to go.
Because you can make a case that after three or four teams, everyone else is kind of like in the same boat.
Yeah. So what I say about the AFC specifically is that it's thick around the middle, meaning you have a log jam there in the middle. Many people, many people who want to BITCH on social media are saying that the refs are the reason why the Chiefs are good. Oh, okay. You keep telling yourself that. You are right. The Chiefs are the NFL's favorite, and the only reason they win is because the refs are on their side.
It's a lame excuse.
It is.
We've talked about this. The referee, look, there's bad officiating, but you know what? There's other reasons why you blow games. I mean, I don't want to get off topic, but the whole thing with the WNBA finals, you know, and the fact that the Minnesota Lynx coach called out basically the referees after the Liberty won the title, I think was a little out of line. There's a reason why you blew a 15-point lead.
Multiple times in that series, actually. Yeah.
Multiple times. How about look at that issue? Instead of calling out refs after a team has won a championship.
Agreed.
I think it's a little much with the refereeing.
And over a 5-game series, yep. Too, you multiple times had games in hand that would have made it unnecessary to play a game 5. So yeah, I get that fans get upset about calls. I understand it, but generally they even out. And you may not want to hear this, but in the NFL, according to Gene Steratore, and I've seen his numbers, which I appreciate, he's kind of opened up the book to me and told me about the whole process of officiating and how they are graded. And I mean graded extensively. Every single play, every single official receives a grade, even if that official is not part of the particular play. And if no flag is called, they get graded on position. They get graded on what they're looking at. They get graded, obviously, on calls versus missed calls. It's a very strenuous grading process, he tells me, to the point where officials, all of them, have the ability to appeal when they don't agree with the grade the NFL gives them, because the grade ultimately accumulates to the point where you either earn playoff games or you do not. And obviously there's extra money and there's prestige in being part of a playoff crew. So he has told me, and I do believe it, of course, that the NFL officials, they grade out at 95% as the average. Some of them are even better than that. 95% of the time, they're making the best calls and the right calls. Plus there's replay now. I'm okay with officials not being perfect. And let's be fair. A lot of times you all are complaining about judgment calls. They have better judgment than you do. Right? And so you can complain about a judgment call all you want, but that requires a human brain, requires a human to make that judgment call. There's a reason why they very quickly tried and then got rid of, they tried and trashed replay for pass interference calls because it doesn't work to go back and do replay on a judgment call. They do have the ability as a group of officials to overturn a call. If one guy says one thing, but a couple of officials see it some other way, well, they will amend or change or take back a particular call they've made. Now, is that what happened at Texas? And this is part of the crux, right? Where it really got divisive in Austin. There was a call made, a pass interference call that was made against Texas. And when it was called, obviously, it was frustrating for the Longhorns fans. They didn't agree with the call. Judgment call here, right? Judgment call. They didn't agree with the call. And because Georgia was already pounding them into submission and the Bulldogs were well on their way to a win, they start chucking water bottles and trash on the field. And it got so bad that there were hundreds of bottles laying out there on the field in front of the student section. And Steve Sarkisian even had to go over to the student section, cross the field, go over to the student section, hold up his hands and admonish them to stop throwing crap on the field.
We've got a passionate fan base, and I think that showed Saturday night. And, you know, I think we were all a little upset in that moment. And, you know, I just think that we've all got to use a little better discretion in moments like that, that we don't want that to be the narrative, that that's what, you know, DKR is all about.
Yeah, I can understand. And he's talking about Daryl Royal Stadium. I know that I could sit here and give you the whole spiel about why it's dangerous and why that's dumb. And I'm reminded that there's alcohol involved and fans are not logical or rational and they get incensed. It is embarrassing for Texas. You're talking about a team that just made it into the SEC, one of the premier college sports conferences in the country. And this is how you show yourself when you're the number one team on a Saturday night that's hosting a top five opponent. This is what you get, what you see. I mean, there is a chance. I don't know that one time makes a pattern, but there is a chance that networks and the conference will shy away from putting your school, and especially a home game, on TV if that's what you're, if that's what they're seeing on a routine basis. If this is how fans handle themselves, you're potentially going to affect your school's ability to attract some of the biggest games and the biggest stages. Now, I think part of the reason why Georgia was so upset, in fact, it was probably the entire reason why Georgia was so upset, in addition to feeling like their players were in danger from objects that were being tossed onto the field, Kirby Smart then has to watch the call get reversed. And he's worried that because the fans were throwing things and acting so obnoxiously, that the officials were influenced by that and then reversed the call.
Now we've set a precedent that if you throw a bunch of stuff on the field and endanger athletes, that you got a chance to get your call reversed. And that's unfortunate because, to me, that's dangerous. That's not what we want. And that's not criticizing officials. That's what happened.
I think in the end, they got it right, you know, and how they got to that point, I don't, you know, exactly they conferred on that thing, but I think they got the call right. And I think that's all we want when we're playing the game is consistency as coaches and then getting calls correct. And I think they got the call correctly.
All right. Well, it's, again, a judgment call, a matter of opinion. I understand why Kirby would be upset about it, though, because the way that it looks, the optics of it, those fans, alcohol juiced up or not, they throw a bunch of crap on the field, they stop the game, they put us in danger, and then the officials reverse the call? Is it because they were influenced by what was happening out there on the field? Now, I think that's probably an emotional reaction as well. There's no way. Those officials would never work again if that was what was happening. So you'd have to go back for yourself and decide whether or not there was enough evidence. The call was questionable at the time anyway. Texas issued a statement, of course, this type of behavior will not be tolerated. The SEC, this is interesting, Pete. They fined Texas $250,000. So this is a hefty fine, not for a school of this caliber, though. They've got my goodness, like 1 week of their football budget is probably $250,000, right? So they've got money hand over fist. But the SEC has also said the school has to meet requirements assigned by the commissioner that include looking for the fans and suspending those fans that threw debris on the field. Pete, there were hundreds of bottles thrown on the field. So that does, in fact, mean the SEC expects Texas to go back through its footage, back through the video from whatever camera angles they have, and find as many students as they possibly can who were culprits in this situation.
Put up a pot of coffee. You're going to be there for a while.
Going to be there for overnight for multiple days.
And you know what? And you know what? They're getting off easy.
And they have to do a whole written report. Here's the next step, though. If it happened again, you know, if you ignore Matthew McConaughey's calls to comport yourself with better behavior, it's a good thing that he jumped into the fray, just so everyone knows that he's not on board with them throwing things on the field. The SEC could suspend Texas' right to sell alcohol at the stadium, and you can imagine how the students would feel about that.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose some of them would come up with creative ways to get around it, but that would, to me, that's the detriment. And if I'm the SEC, this was egregious enough that that's what I do. Even if it's only for the next game or two games, that's the step I take so that the students understand and whoever else who threw junk on the field understands this will not be tolerated, as in zero tolerance policy.
Suspending alcohol can work, but also can get people getting there pretty loaded up, too. That's the other risk you run with that.
Meaning making people angry?
No. They
drink beforehand.
Drink beforehand.
Yeah, sure. There's creative ways around it. But at the very least, after they're sitting in the stands for a certain amount of time, being ticked off that they can't drink alcohol, they're going to sober up.
Right.
So as long as you're checking bags, and there should be a bag policy at all these stadiums, as long as you're checking bags, at some point, they might sober up. So I actually would have taken that statement or that step and made that statement just to be sure that students understood how serious, like drop dead serious, this issue is. And it's happening more and more. Remember, we just recently talked about it with Dodgers fans, right? I mean, it's dangerous and it should not be tolerated. And I take kind of a hard line stance on it. All right, coming up, we're going to give you the options for TD of the week and also going to get into some of the updates from the injuries that the Niners suffered, because their roster could look a lot different moving forward, at least for a few weeks. So we are dropping in these injury updates because they're too depressing if we do them all at one time. You can let us know, behind the Chiefs, who are the top five teams in the NFL at A-Law Radio or our Facebook page. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, Lamar Jackson's connection with Mark Andrews making Ravens history.
Ravens have it first and goal. Shotgun snap, line drive throw, caught at the goal line, spinning, belt high grab, and a touchdown. And it goes to Mark Andrews, who just became the all-time leading touchdown receiver in Raven history.
Pair of TD receptions for Mark Andrews while Lamar threw for 281 and 5 scores. Ravens too much for the Bucs, 41-31. Kevin Harlan the call, Westwood 1. Derrick Henry ran for 169 while the Bucs, they suffered a pair of injuries. Mike Evans left with a hamstring injury, and Chris Godwin suffered a dislocated ankle with less than a minute remaining as he was carted off. In the other game, the Cardinals able to drive 56 yards on 7 plays, captured the Chad Ryland 32-yard field goal as time expired. They upend the Chargers 17-15. Kyler Murray, a touchdown in the air, another on the ground. Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams reportedly facing a 2-game suspension by the NFL for violating the league's performance-enhancing substance policy. Washington continues to fly high, sitting in first place, but Jaden Daniels, he's dealing with a rib injury.
So it's not going to be something that's going to knock him out for a long term. And so, like I said, we're going to list it as week to week. And like I said, hopefully we'll play this week and we'll take it every day of it all the way through.
That's head coach Dan Quinn. Meanwhile, the Dolphins plan to have Tua Tagovailoa return to practice Wednesday with the intentions of him returning to the field Sunday against the Cardinals.
Every time we all suit up, we're all taking a risk that we could potentially get hurt, whether it's a concussion, a broken bone, anything. You get up off of the bed the wrong way, you potentially could risk you spraining your ankle. There's just risk in any and everything. And I'm willing to play the odds.
Elsewhere, no surprise but official, the Browns lost to Sean Watson for the season with a ruptured Achilles. 49ers lost Brandon Ayuk for the season with a torn ACL. There's also concern about Deebo Samuel in a hospital with a form of pneumonia. No timetable for his return. Raiders signing Desmond Ridder off the Cardinals practice squad after they lost Aiden O'Connell 4 to 6 weeks with a broken thumb. NBA Nuggets keeping Aaron Gordon in the fold reportedly agreed to a four-year deal, $133 million. In just one game in the NHL, as the Maple Leafs ripped the Lightning 5-2 behind a pair from William Nylander. I'm Marco Belletti.
The Infinity Sports Network is on your smart speaker. All you have to say is, play Infinity Sports Network. That's it. Play Infinity Sports Network. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat ten. He's gone.
They throw to the end zone. Touchdown! Hey, the guy missed. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Center's helping into the end zone.
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Cincinnati Bengals.
Here comes Hopkins. He swings the leg and thwack. We are underway. Charlie Jones catches right at the goal line and runs it out. Far side Numerals nice. To the 20, 25, 30. Nice. Only the kicker can tackle nice. Him. He failed to do it. Charlie Jones down the sideline. Woo. 20, 10, 5. Oh, dive for the pylon. Touchdown!
About it.
Or did he step out first?
No, it's a touchdown.
Charlie Jones, man. Who had a punt return touchdown as a rookie last year against Baltimore, takes it 100 yards for a game-opening score.
The Seattle Seahawks.
Robinson stays in the backfield for Atlanta. Cousins scrambles left side, gets hit, goes down. Maffei, ball comes out. Ball rolling, picked up far side. It's hauled down the far sidelines. He's going to score. Touchdown, Seahawks. Derek Hall on the sack by Boye Maffei. Cousins coughs it up, and Hall goes the distance. The second-year linebacker out of Auburn, he probably has a suite full of family and friends here watching. Cousins had nowhere to go with the ball. It's knocked away from Cousins by Boye Maffei. Picked up, and Hall takes it 36 for the touchdown. The Seahawks up 30-14.
The Green Bay Packers.
Second and 10 from the 30th. The Texans snap to Love. In the pocket, waits. Lawson, left side. Wicks, got it.
Oh,
touchdown.
Yes.
Dontavian Wicks on a floater down the left sidelines from Jordan Love to beat D'Angelo Ross and propel the Packers back into the lead.
The Baltimore Ravens.
On second and 17, Lamar to throw. Going deep, near side. He's got Bateman open at the five. Touchdown, Rashad Bateman. And the Ravens strike again. 49 yards from Lamar and Jackson.
Man, we've got some great candidates for TD of the week. And as always, some terrific calls. The Bengals get a 100-yard kickoff return from Charlie Jones as they had no offense in the first half of their game on Sunday, which meant that they needed all of those 100 yards to get on the board. The calls with Dan Horde and Dave Lapham as they finally end a six-game losing skid on the road in Cleveland. But it, again, took that Charlie Jones kickoff return to get them on the board in the first half. Steve Rabel on Seahawks radio. Three turnovers by Kirk Cousins in the fourth quarter of their game in Atlanta on Sunday. But that sack and the fumble recovered by Derek Hall for the score. What a major momentum shift for Seattle, getting that victory on the road in hostile territory. Wayne Larrabee on Packers radio. Yeah, another game in which Green Bay was locked in a fight. Love this. A terrific tussle with the Texans, two of the best teams in the NFL. But that shot to Dontavian Wicks from Jordan Love was terrific. Pinpoint accuracy and, of course, a great catch. And then finally, from Monday night, one of the games, Jerry Sandusky on Ravens radio, one of five touchdown passes for Lamar Jackson. No touchdown runs, only passes, and he looked terrific in the passing attack. It's always helpful when you've got Derrick Henry to scare the defense, right? Makes their passing attack a little bit easier. Those are your candidates for TD of the week. It was a career day, by the way, for Rashad Bateman as one of the targets for Lamar Jackson. That poll will be up momentarily on both our show Twix at Amy After Hours, as well as on our Facebook page. And I do so appreciate that you're weighing in with our top five teams through week seven, which is kind of crazy. Do you know what? So thankful that on Tuesday night, there's no World Series baseball. They've given us a respite until Friday. There's no NFL. Phew. But we do have the NBA season openers. And that means not just the Boston Celtics getting back to business, the defending champions, who had, I wouldn't say a rough summer, but they were in headlines for different reasons, right? Jason Tatum not being a major part of what Team USA did to win its gold medal in Au Paris, but also Jaylen Brown getting left off of the Olympic roster, and a lot of talk about that, a lot of questions that he had to answer as well. So that's one, I should say, marquee headline as we head into what's to come. Now, the Knicks had a terrific run last season, so it's the Knicks on the road at the Celtics as they unveil their championship banner. First one since 2008, right? No, sometimes I get the date wrong. 2008 for the Celtics, 2009 for the Yankees with the World Series. But we also have the Lakers home opener. Producer Pete, anyone talking about the Lakers home opener and the fact that this could be history with LeBron James, who begins yet another season. Now we're talking two decades here, along with his son. Now, we haven't had a whole lot from J.J. Redick about whether or not his son will play in this game, if Bronny will make an appearance. I can imagine the Lakers want this history, especially on national TV. But what's the chatter about this game that's the second half of the doubleheader?
Wow. You know what? The chatter from really everybody in terms of the opening night, I think it's very mum compared to when we hear stuff later on. I feel like the NBA regular season opener, yes, there's excitement, but they're not really ready yet, I think, in my opinion.
Well, fans may not know that Tuesday is opening night, but if LeBron James and Bronny play in the same game in the NBA, you can imagine that it's a major headline, not just for sports, but transcending sports.
Of course.
Yeah. I think this is kind of cool. I saw that Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. will both be in the building in L.A. on Tuesday, more than 30 years after they were the first father-son duo to team up in baseball history. Ken Griffey Jr. was saying that he wants to be there and he wants to be there with his dad. And so that's kind of cool to think about the guys who will be in the building, since they were the first father-son duo to play baseball. And now we get to see a father-son duo maybe in this first game play basketball. And of course, the Timberwolves look a whole lot different too, because they no longer have Cat. You've got the Celtics and the Knicks and Karl Anthony Towns in that game, which is interesting. We saw LeBron and Bronny play one time together during their preseason schedule. They weren't involved in the same play, but they were on the court at the same time. And yeah, J.J. Redick, another weird wrinkle for the Lakers, he's not indicated what his plans are for Tuesday's opening night, but it could be history. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.